So I'm Frank DeMayo, and I'm going to be talking about our work on toward automated structure determination from near atomic resolution data. And so it's a bit of a vague term, but so I mean roughly 3 to 5 angstrom resolution EM data. And so again, the goal, the overall goal of my work is to have this, this fully automated pipeline where you can basically provide an EM reconstruction, the sequence of all of the proteins contained inside of it, and some information about the symmetry, and it runs through the pipeline and out comes an all-atom model. And we're not there yet, but I'm going to talk about a couple of the pieces. And so a couple of the pieces we've made pretty good progress with, and I'm going to talk about a couple of these pieces today. And so the first is going to be the de novo model building. And so that is, and so the problem here is that, again, you have a map, and you have no identifiable structural homologs. And so you need to basically trace a model into this map and register the sequence to that backbone. And so it turns out that at near atomic resolution, at 3 to 5 angstrom resolution, that second step is difficult. And the issue is that you can see, and again, I'm illustrating this 4.8 angstrom reconstruction here, you can see sort of the continuous backbone density, but there's very few sidechain features. And it's very difficult to register sequence into this map, and it's very easy to make mistakes when doing so. And so with high-resolution data, of course, there's these crystallographic auto-tracing programs like ARP-Warp, Buccaneer, and Phoenix Auto-Build. And they generally, again, proceed in two steps. They first identify the backbone and then register the sequence to the structure. And so instead, and so I should mention this is work done by a graduate student, Ray Wang. And so instead, what we do is really to combine these two steps into one. And so in addition to sidechain, and so in other words, in addition to sidechain density information, we're actually making use of backbone conformation to help register sequence into density. Again, it's drawing off this idea that the local sequence of a protein restricts the local conformational space of that protein backbone. And furthermore, so given, again, this amino acid sequence that I've shown here, there's some restricted conformational space that's allowed. And furthermore, we can sample from that conformational space by looking at already solved structures with similar local sequence, like I've shown here. And so now, then the way that our approach works, the way that our approach makes use of this information, is to take each of these samples of this allowed backbone conformational space, and we do a 6-dimensional search of the density map for it. And so, like I've shown an example here, we search the map, and we find a number of locations where that fragment fits reasonably well. For each of those solutions, we actually do build side chains and further refine these individual fragments into the density map. The idea being that there's not a ton of sidechain information, but there is some sidechain information that we can draw off of. And so then we do this for every fragment, for every position in the protein. So for at least for what I'm talking about today, we use 9 residue overlapping windows and search the map. And so now what this gives us at each position in the protein, we have dozens to possibly hundreds of placements in the map for that fragment. And so now the idea is we want to then find basically the pick out all of the correct placements from that first round. And so then the idea, again, that we have here is that, well, the correct placements all have to be consistent with each other. So what I mean by consistent is illustrated on this slide. So when we have fragments, so again, we have these overlapping fragments. And so when they assign a position to the same residue, their two fragment assignments are consistent if they assign the same position to that residue. Similarly, with residues close in the amino acid sequence, in a consistent fragment pair, those residues are close in space, and you can't have overlapping residues. So we encode this as just a simple, I don't know if this is clear to see, but we encode this as just a simple score function. So given some fragment assignment, we compute the score as the sum of the fit to density scores of the individual fragments plus this compatibility, these pairwise compatibility scores among all the pairs in our fragment set. So then given the scoring function and the initial fragment placements, we can just do Monte Carlo sampling of an assignment of fragments to the set. And so I've illustrated it. Yes? No two residues can occupy. Oh, sorry. Weird wording there. Yes, and there's no overlap. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so here's an example of the way that this approach works. So we have some density map. Here's the map that I showed earlier. And so, again, we take this entire sequence, we place fragments into this map, and we run this Monte Carlo sampling. And so I'm plotting, so what I'm plotting here is we run a number of different Monte Carlo trajectories. And so I'm plotting each point on this plot is a single trajectory. The x-axis is the accuracy. So of the things, so we have a crystal structure here, and so we know the answer. And so of the things that we've placed, what percent of them were placed within 2.5 angstroms of the native structure? The y-axis is the score with our energy function. And then the colors here indicate the number. And so we don't assign a position for every single amino acid in the protein. We're just trying to find this maximum set of fragments that is consistent with one another. And so for some positions in the protein, we actually don't assign any position. So again, so what we do is we take these low energy, these isoenergetic configurations. We look for consistency among them. And so we find for all of the fragment placements that are consistent among these low energy configurations, and we get a model that looks like this. Again, you can see we've already placed some seed positions. And so then what I'm showing you, looking at this another way, this is just so the x-axis here is just walking along the amino acid sequence. Each of these points is a single fragment placement from the first round. The y-axis is the RMS of that fragment placement to the docked crystal structure. And so you can see, and in pink, are the points that actually this method picks out, the fragments that this method picks out. And you can see it does a really good job at picking out these near-native, relatively few near-native fragment placements from among this entire set of incorrect placements. And then we then can continue this for several rounds. So we just basically eliminate the density and eliminate these parts of amino acid sequence that were already placed. We rerun the search procedure because we're now concentrating sampling in the regions where we don't have any fragments placed. We're able to get more near-native fragments. And in fact, again, the Monte Carlo sampling is able to pick these out. And so as the coverage gets more complete too, you can see there's better convergence. And finally, after three rounds, we're able to get the vast majority of the structure correctly, the backbone correctly traced and the sequence correctly registered on that backbone. And so then I'm just illustrating that result here. We get the model, the final partial model, which is about 89% of the sequence covered. And in fact, there's so few uncovered residues that we can use our loop rebuilding method, which I don't really have time to talk about. But we can use that to complete the model. And we get a full-length model with 1.19 angstrom RMS to the crystal structure. Most of the difference is in some of these surface loops. And you can see the core packing is very, very close to native as well. And so then we tried this on a benchmark set of 9 different EM maps. And I guess the important things and the important things to look at are the last two columns here. And so this is showing the RMS and the coverage of the final partial model. And so you can see, again, in the 6 cases where we're able to solve the structure, we get at least 70% of the structure placed in the partial model. Then there's sort of one case where we get a less complete model, and then 2 cases where we have very poor completeness and we're now placing incorrect things. But it gives a clear, again, the percent coverage in this gives a clear indication of whether the model is correct or not. And then finally, in these cases where we got better than 70%, we were able to complete the model using our loop building. And again, you can see that we're able to, in all but one case, sub 2 angstrom RMS, and in that one case, just a little above 2 angstrom RMS. And so I'm just illustrating some of these cases I've shown here. So the TRIPV1 model, for example, we can register about 75% of the model, pretty good RMS, and very, very good core packing compared to the deposited structure. And similarly here, again, we're getting we're really recovering native core packing here. Obviously, some of these are pretty high resolution. And so we compared this to Buccaneer, which is a crystal. So we processed this basically as crystal data using the exact same data set that we had used and ran Buccaneer on this, which is, at least I found to work the best at sort of low resolution de novo tracing. And so, in fact, Buccaneer is, so while it can place a lot of C-alpha atoms, and in fact does try to register a lot of sequence, really only in 2 cases is it able to get sort of a reasonable amount of sequence placed in these maps. And even in those 2 cases, it's only about half of the structure. And in the rest of the cases, it doesn't correctly register much or at all. So then looking at the 3 cases where the approach failed, mainly we're having problems still getting beta sheets correct. Again, here's one case here where this is the case where we're able to get about 50% model. We get this lower domain completely correct, just about, or at least largely correct. But this upper domain, we're only able to get a little bit. So everything that we did place is correctly registered in sequence, but we couldn't complete tracing of this domain. Similarly, down here, so this is one of the cases where we actually had made errors, and so it was basically round two where the errors were made. So the first round model was actually did place all the helices correctly with reasonably low RMS, but again, we're unable to trace all of the beta sheets in this protein. And so this was, this was really nice, but it is all already solved structures. And so we wanted to try this now on an unsolved case. And so fortunately, we got contacted. And this is worked on with collaborators Misha Marek and Ed Egelman. And so they contacted us with this case, basically this helical map. Has two subunits with 600. So the asymmetric unit contains two subunits with 660 residues. What do I want to say here? And there's no known, so for this, there's no known structural homologs at all. And so we thought, great, and so the map is at 3.2 angstroms resolution, although there are some regions of lower local resolution. And so again, we tried our approach with this. So we, again, all of our work so far has assumed a segmented map. And so we began by just manually segmenting what we thought was one asymmetric unit. And then we traced both of the chains simultaneously. And so after eight rounds, in this case, we're able to get a fairly complete model. So in parallel, a model was manually traced into this map, and so good validation of this, the manually traced model had really good agreement, over 360 residues. It was within one angstrom RMS. But there was sort of one key difference here, and so this is a region of really low local resolution, and so the manual model assigns a particular, and so let me explain this region a little bit. So basically, there's this 35 residue stretch here where there's disordered regions on either side of it. And so it's very difficult to register sequence into this region. And so the manual model, and so basically, there's sort of one density feature here where you could put an aromatic, and indeed, the manual model put this Phi95 here. Instead, the automated model, using this predicted backbone information, placed Phi101 there. And so we see this difference here. And in fact, when we then refine both of these models and evaluate them, we see that the manual model has the automatic model has a preference for in both density energy. And this is just basically a function of the correlation coefficient between model and map, and also in terms of the geometry energy, so the force field that we're using in refinement. And I'll get more into the details of what these are. But this leads us to believe that the automatic placement is actually correct in this case. And so again, that concludes the de novo building part. And so then I'm going to talk for a little bit about what we're doing for all atom refinement. So refining models against near atomic resolution EM maps. And so again, the goal of refinement really against EM density is to identify and potentially correct errors in an initial model, improve the fit of the model to the data, and to improve the model geometry. The way refinement works is that we basically want to find the position of atoms that optimizes this function shown here. So basically that optimizes the model's agreement with the data plus some geometry term that describes how protein-like a particular model is. And so this is done routinely with crystallographic data. And so at high resolution, you get a very strong signal from the data part of this equation. And so in fact, the geometry term can be relatively weak. And so in fact, most crystallographic force fields just use bond lengths, bond angles, planarity, and sterics. But because the data gives you such a strong signal to the native conformation, that really is sufficient. However, in lower resolution, it becomes, so now the data, there's kind of this broad basin of solutions that look equally good. And so given this this low resolution geometry term with the low resolution data, we have a number of solutions that look equally good given the data and this geometry term. And so again, my work is trying to incorporate more information that we know from biophysics into this geometry term in order to help disambiguate this sort of basin of equivalently good solutions. And so to do this, we're making use of the Rosetta force field. And so the basic idea is that we use information, again, from biophysics and from previously solved structures to reduce the conformational space. And so to give basically a better geometry term. And so these things include like just things that proteins tend to have well-packed hydrophobic cores. They tend to have favorable electrostatic interactions. They tend to form hydrogen bonds with particular geometries and don't like to bury unsatisfied hydrogen bond donors or acceptors in the core. There's also distinct distributions of both backbone and sidechain torsions. And so we can incorporate all of this information through this geometry function. And in addition, we can draw off of some of the tools that have been developed for improved optimization, including this discrete sidechain optimization, which unlike minimization or dynamics, allows you to escape from local minima during refinement, and as well as different minimization and dynamics movement. And so, actually, before I get into the EM refinement, I'm just going to say that we've actually used this idea for low-resolution crystallographic data. And so what we've shown here, and I'm just going to very briefly go through this, but we've shown that this force field at low resolution does do better than sort of standard crystallographic force fields. We use CNS with den refinement, refmac, and Phoenix refine, and we're able to get, so starting from 25 different cases, we're able to get more sub-2 angstrom structures than any other approach, and I'm just showing one really nice illustration where, our refinement was able to make this very large domain motion. And so now we want to apply this same idea to cryo-EM, but there were a couple of sort of key things that we needed to address before we could really come up with a cryo-EM refinement protocol. And so I think the first point has been touched on by some of the earlier speakers, but so model validation is key. You can fit a model arbitrarily good to a reconstruction. You need to have some way of validating that what you're fitting is real and not just noise. Additionally, again, this is something else that's come up, is that there's sort of maps are not don't have a uniform resolution. There's variations in the local resolution across a map, and so we've come up with a solution for this as well that I'll talk about. And also, again, the problem of refinement in general is that it's a relatively small radius of convergence, so the starting model often has to be pretty accurate to really, you know, snap into place. And so we've introduced, drawing off of this idea of the discrete sidechain optimization, we've introduced some limited discrete backbone optimization and refinement that, again, further increases the radius of convergence of this refinement. And so, again, we've heard about a couple of different validation methods for validating models from the previous two talks. The approach that we make use of is relatively simple. We have our gold standard reconstruction. And so we basically take the two half maps, we use one for fitting, and we use the other for evaluation of the model. And so then, you know, we can see. And in fact, what we have found out, and I'll just go briefly through this, but one of the things that we discovered is that sort of the high-resolution shells of the agreement to the independent map seem to be the most informative. And so I'm showing basically in blue, there's a lot of lines here, but in blue is the agreement between the model and the map, between the two independent maps. What do I want to say? So in red and yellow are the training and the testing set, respectively. I guess it's really hard to see that yellow. But you can see, I guess, at 0.1, there's not really much in the way of overfitting. But at the green plot, you can see we're overfitting the training map very heavily. But again, the testing map agreement shows that it's now significantly worse. And in fact, if we just integrate over those shells, we can show that, again, so what we're plotting here is refinements at different weights on the experimental data. So as we get higher and higher, we're going to be overfitting more and more to the training set. And you can see integrating over those shells, the agreement to the training map increases linearly, and the agreement to the testing map shows a peak, and then it decreases, again, identifying this overfitting regime. And you can see this corresponds nicely to this inflection point where, again, the energy, the geometry term, also sharply increases. All right, so then the second part, again, this idea of local resolution, that some parts of the map are very sharp, some parts are much more blurred. And so, and it just has to do again with local variation in the system. But so then the way we deal with this, again, is similar to what's done in crystallography. So in addition to refining the atomic coordinates, we also refine these per atom B factors. We do this all in real space. So in addition to fitting the positions, we're also fitting basically a width, so how spread out the density is around a particular atom. And so then our refinement now alternates coordinate and B factor refinement, and you know, to avoid, you know, well, we're introducing a lot of new parameters now with these Bs. And so we regularize this by just use a constraint function that makes sure the B factors are very, very close. So there's a penalty for B factors of nearby atoms deviating. And so again, we tried this with, and again, this is the proteasome data set, deposited crystal structure, and I'm showing the B factors of the crystal structure. So then I took that model, I cleared the B factors, and re-refined it with coordinate NB factor refinement against the EM map, and you can see there's very, very good agreement between the two. And so finally, the third point that I wanted to talk about was this, the improved sampling method. So again, radius of convergence was a big problem, and we noticed that this discrete, at least in the crystal case, this discrete sidechain optimization really seemed to help escape local minima, right? Kind of jumping out, you know, we're stuck in some local basin, and it allows us to jump out of that. And so the problem is that, again, at low resolution hand trace models or homology models may have backbone errors as well. And so we developed a similar scheme. We call it this iterative density guided sampling. The idea is that we can identify in the protein some local region that poorly fits the data. We then, again, using this kind of earlier idea, we find all of the backbones in this region consistent with the local sequence in this region. We dock them into density nearby, so we know the endpoints, and so we can very straightforwardly dock them into this density, and then individually refine each of these fragments into the map. And so it's using just some reduced force field that doesn't need the rest of the context of the protein there. And so what you can see, I guess, is because we're doing this with isolated fragments, this is very, very quick. And so we can do this at each position, we can do this for 50 different conformations. For each of these backbone conformations, we choose the one that best fits the experimental data, and then refine that backbone in the context of the rest of the structure. And this is quick enough that you can do this for 1,000 steps, and it runs in a reasonable amount of time. And so finally, with all those pieces in place, we wanted to test this approach, how well it performs, as a function of both starting model quality and of map resolution. And so for starting model quality, so again, we're using this 20S proteasome data set. For starting model quality, there's a number of different crystal structures of homologs, ranging from very low sequence identity to very high sequence identity. And so this full reconstruction at 3.3 angstroms I'm showing here, on the x-axis is just the different starting models, starting from the closest to the furthest. So what I'm reporting here is just the fraction of residues that are correctly placed within 1 angstrom resolution. Actually, 1 angstrom RMS. And so what you can see, again, the starting models, they get very, very low. We also tried MDFF refinement on this. And so MDFF refinement does a very good job. It consistently improves things, but it is somewhat tethered to the starting model in that it has difficulty improving starting models as it gets further and further away. Well, our approach, that aside from sort of two cases where there were very large sequence alignment problems, was able to kind of lock into the native solution from these relatively distant starting points. We tried the same thing then. And so then, I guess Yifan made for us maps with a subset of particles, 5,000, 3,000, and 1,000, giving rise to lower resolution reconstructions. And so again, we want to see now how well does this work as we drop resolution. And so what we can see is that down to about 4.4 angstroms resolution, we see that roughly that same behavior. We're able to lock into a very accurate model with correct core packing for most of these cases. Again, the cases where there's sequence registration errors, it is problematic. But finally, at 6 angstroms resolution, now we're no longer able to. And the problem here is that there's a number of different, even with this rich geometry function that we're using, there's a number of equivalently good solutions given the data. So there's a number of solutions that look equally good given the agreement to the independent map and to the force field that we're using. Fortunately, this is somewhat detectable, and so one of the things that we use that's really important is to look at model convergence. I mean, in some sense, we're sort of independently, we're independently sampling. And so if models show good convergence, like in this case, this is one of the medium difficulty targets at 3.3 angstroms, you can see that incredibly tight cluster of structures here. And so again, we can believe the core packing reasonably well here because it's so tightly converged. At 6 angstroms resolution, you can see there's like a significant amount of model diversity. The model convergence is poor. Another thing that we make use of for validating models, again, this independent FSC measure. And so what you can see is that of all the models we generated, I'm plotting here for the 4 different maps that we used. On the x-axis is the fraction of residues within one angstrom, and on the y-axis is this sort of integrated FSC on an independent map. And again, you can see that this gives a good sort of relative measure for selecting the best model given the... Oh, sorry. Okay, almost done here. It gives a good relative measure, but it doesn't really give a good absolute measure. You can see the values are different for each of these different resolution maps. And so finally, I guess the last thing that I want to talk about, and so we've been looking now at refining more and more hand-traced models as opposed to, hand-traced models as opposed to homology models. And one of the things that we've noticed is, so previously we just used density information to identify what regions were incorrect and what regions we should locally sample different backbone conformations for. But we found this particularly troubling problem. So after our refinement, we found that there was pretty good convergence, but it was incorrect, basically. So I'm just showing the backbone trace here on this map, and you can see the model in blue is what had come out of refinement. And I think it's clear to see things are wrong, but the density score didn't really pick this up because there's a side chain that's coming out here and sort of fills in this density okay. But one of the things, what we did notice is that instead model strain. So we're refining against this, both this combination of the fit to density term and the geometry term. And so if something's wrong, there's going to be disagreement between those two. And so there's going to be strain in one or the other. So either the local agreement to the data is going to be strained or the geometry term is going to be strained. And so in this case, you can see clearly, and so this is just this third peak here, but you can see clearly that the geometry is strained here. And so in fact, by resampling that, we're able to get the correct solution. And so the last part, and I'll just kind of skip through this, but the last part is that, so we've now been applying this again to Yifan Chang's trip V1 structure and trying to refine it. So our initial refinement shows, several places where the strain, so even though the model fits the density very, very well, there's a number of places where there's this local strain. So we're showing a couple zoomed in, and we're able to, fix these. And so now we have a model that fits the data equally well with no strain. In fact, you can see, so if we look at the cross-validated FSC, you can see that we're able to improve from the blue to the pink model. So the blue is just the deposited structure, the pink is the refined model. If you look at the training agreement versus testing map agreement, again, the FSCs are virtually identical for the two of these, suggesting that we're not overfitting to anything. And so then, in conclusion, I think up to 4.5 angstrom data that you are able to get atomic accuracy models. I think that is reasonable. And again, I think there's a number of different things that we look at in order to see whether or not we have solved the structure. Again, the good fit to independent data, no strain on the model, and a well-conserved ensemble of solutions. And so I'm just going to skip that, and thank you. Yes.
First of all, is the I think the most important value of the trial here map are those regions that are extended to neighboring molecules. What I call
the map's not on.
Yes.
Okay. So I think the real value of crowd EM map is the ability to resolve interactions among molecules.
Yes.
So, in other words, the regions that are extended towards into neighboring molecules, extensions, what I call extensions.
Yes.
So I think the model, I mean the method you suggesting is very much dependent whether you could identify those regions, and if you could, how do you can model these interactions? Otherwise, you will not be able to model those regions extended from the main body of the molecules.
Yes. So, I mean, there's a couple different ways. I think it's not, I think you're correct in that you're right. You need, if you're modeling something that reaches out and touches another subunit, you need to have both subunits present. You can't just cut. But so I think there's a couple things. So first of all, if it's, they're symmetrically related, then it's straightforward to just make use of that. In fact, the rebuilding process, so this loop rebuilding process that I talked about, is able to build these connected things to connected subunits. The other thing is, and again, I showed this with the one case, is that you can actually search for multiple chains. So the fragment assembly doesn't need just a single chain at a time. You can search, if you have some complex with five different chains, you can search for that independently, or you can have docked crystal structures and then build things to the connecting points.
A second
yes.
Quick question is the, does your method require a seed, or where to begin?
No. So that's the, that's really what the fragment placement is doing, is it's finding that. I mean, that's sort of one of the hardest parts, I think, is to find that initial seed. And so that's, it's trying to, it basically is searching for everything in the map, and then tries to find these consistent overlapping fragments and kind of place that as the initial seed, and then can grow from there. That's the main idea.
It's very, very impressive, and I was wondering, what are your plans to include RNA in this business?
Yeah. So that's something I want to get. It's definitely not straightforward. So certainly, it's possible to model RNA. There's no de novo building for RNA, but it's possible to refine RNA, or it's possible to build protein around RNA. Refinement of both together is currently a bit of a problem. It's something where I think a lot of people are interested in, and so it's something we're looking at, but it's not ready to go currently.
So most of the times we're working with multi-component systems.
Yes.
And even if you have 3 angstroms or 4 angstrom information, I can imagine that it can be very difficult to determine how to segment a particular region in order to figure out how the protein that you know is there fits. So how would you suggest going about that problem?
So that's something absolutely we want to we want to look at, because that is an important problem. So I think one idea, the simplest idea is just you put everything in there. You have 10 chains, you have a gigantic map, you just put it all in there. I think in practice that may not work. And so instead, I think what can be done is you can sort of segment what seems to be either subunits or just even spheres, and try tracing individual chains into those pieces, and then use that to refine, to refine things in some sense. I mean, more work is needed on that. We haven't looked too much at this.
I have a question about your B factor model.
Yeah.
How do you select it based on an individual atom, or do you have some sort of grouping? Because that could potentially introduce some, it introduces an extra parameter.
Right, exactly.
And danger of overfitting, where you just essentially just smear out.
So we don't, I don't do grouping. I know people have definitely said that before. I don't do B factor grouping. Every atom has it. It's just, you basically tightly constrain the B factors of nearby atoms to avoid overfitting. And you see a very smooth B factor. I mean, in a way, you're just regularizing that. And so deviations from the mean are penalized, basically. So that seems to work reasonably well. And certainly we've validated this against several crystal structures, and it seems to match pretty well.
So yes. I have a question about how much or how little input, and both regards to models and maps, can you put into this? So a lot of people have talked about how we use multiple maps to try to build into, because one region will be well-ordered and one region will be particularly poorly ordered.
Yes.
And does your program, how does it count for particularly a flexible region adjacent to a more well-constrained region? And if you put in, how many restraints can you put in to make that deal with it the most effectively?
All right, so a couple different questions there. So I guess, anything that's, in terms of restraints at least, anything that you can express, again, either as a previous, as a place model or a pairwise, some pairwise scoring term, can be incorporated. In terms of multiple maps, we haven't looked at that so much. Again, we use, again, to handle sort of poor, what do I want to say here? To handle sort of poor, low resolution regions versus high resolution regions, we, again, the B factor fitting is sort of the best tool we have for handling that. The, no, we haven't looked at using multiple maps yet. I don't think it should be too hard to do, but we haven't, we just haven't. Yes.
Hi, Frank. Really beautiful stuff, and it's encouraging that you can go up to 4.5 angstroms and get reliable results. But
yes,
there are different types of 4.5 angstrom maps. So
that's true. That's very true. Absolutely.
I mean, ideally, your FSC is your signal to noise ratio is very high until 4.5 angstrom, then it drops.
Yes.
Realistically, that doesn't always happen. Do you have a feeling, or even some results to indicate how the modeling is affected by the drop off of the signal
to noise
ratio?
We honestly have no. That's a great point. I think just saying this resolution. You're totally correct with that. We don't have enough cases really yet. We've looked at this to say for sure what the curve is. I think really, in terms of the de novo trace, I mean, in terms of both cases, it's really convergence that I think gives you the best indication of how well. I mean, if you get a well-converged ensemble of models. And so, but the poor coverage comes about because you have a bunch of different trajectories that all place different things, and so then the consensus fragments are going to be. And so that's, again, the coverage is sort of a measure of convergence in that case. And so that seems to be the biggest thing. In terms of density features, I mean, you can see, you know, continuous backbone density, isolated strands, and maybe small sidechain bumps, I think, around that resolution in terms of subjectively looking at things.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you very much, Frank. Let's go for lunch.
So remember, there is a